Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, email techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is episode 129 for March 1st, 2012. I am Rodney.
And this is Aaron.
And this is Monkey Around. And as you can tell from the intro, we pay homage to Davy Jones, who passed away this week at age 66.
Yeah, he died of a heart attack, apparently.
In his Florida home, unfortunately.
I thought they were from England.
Well, they are, but he was living in Florida like most retirees.
Oh, okay. I see.
But yeah, the monkeys came along in, I believe it was like 1960s.
Part of the British invasion.
Yeah, which is kind of funny. If you ever see like a documentary on it, they were the band that was basically put together for a TV show.
That's right.
And he was the only one that actually had musical talent singing-wise. And that was the whole thing, was it was going to be a show about a music band. So
then they ended up getting famous.
Yes, famous, and had a really crappy movie. And
oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I don't really remember a whole lot about it, but I remember in the early 90s, MTV here was showing all of the episodes.
Mm.
It was quite
humorous. You mean there were multiple episodes?
Yes.
Ew.
There is probably a box set on Amazon.
Oh, God.
To the wish list.
No, please. No. Well, we have no listener mail to speak of at this point. So we will just sort of
dive right into
strangeness.
Yes. And there really isn't a tremendous amount of security news this week. So we'll start with on February 29th, which was Leap Year Day.
Yesterday.
And apparently, if you saw the 30 Rock episode last week on NBC, you would know to wear yellow and gold. But because we are behind on the DVR, we did not know this.
Mm.
Evidently, they make a spoof about people
Focus.
Making up crazy holidays based mm-hmm. on just nonsense. And they considered Leap Day as being that. But it was not nonsense for Microsoft.
Microsoft Azure.
Azure is sort of their cloud support system that they have where you can store documents and share and collaborate. Well,
oopsie.
They did not code properly to handle leap year. So I think Azure only came out like 3 years ago. So this is the first time they had a leap year to actually interact with.
So it basically went out for several hours yesterday.
Yes, for 12 hours it was out. It took down lots of companies in the U.S. as well as Canada and the U.K.
Now, isn't that stupid? I can see someone getting fired over that.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. Seeing as how writing a calendar is usually like either the first, second, or maybe third exercise that you do in most basic computer programming classes.
I thought the first one was Hello World.
Well, yeah, usually that's the first one. Depends on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when I did Pascal, we had to write a calendar at one point, which is a great, fascinating thing. And you could either do it with little subroutines or you could hard code it in there.
Is that one of the classes you were really bored in? There were a couple that you said were really, really boring.
Well, this was actually high school.
Oh.
This was actually in high school. So it wasn't tremendously boring because it was fun to work with computers in high school.
Yay! Let's destroy the world.
So anyway, Microsoft really isn't completely owning up to what the problem was, and they apologize for the outage and hopefully try to save face with the UK government that was actually using Microsoft Azure.
Whoopsie.
The only problem with an outage like this is it comes up and gives everyone the, so you can't you can't consider the cloud to be secure and safe because it can go down.
Exactly. So, and then you're stuck.
Yeah. So it kind of gives people a little bit of a bad feeling.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to more Microsoft news of note. Yesterday, Microsoft Windows 8 Consumer Preview came out.
Why, yes, it did. The wonderful new design of Windows, where it seems more like the Metro interface that people will find on Windows Phone 7. I have installed it on a virtual machine using Oracle's VirtualBox. Installation was pretty simple, not really a big problem. If you are a visually impaired, say legally blind person that is using a screen reader, you will have to do a dual boot install. So you'll need a secondary partition on your hard drive in order to install the consumer preview. In order to do this, you will have to have one of the ISO images for the DVD, which you can get over at preview.windows.com. You can get a 32-bit or a 64-bit. If you're going to use a virtual machine, you want the 32-bit. If you have an older computer, you probably want to go with the 32-bit. In order to install using a screen reader, you will have to execute the setup.exe out of the sources folder on the actual image that you burn. That will allow you to set up a dual boot. Apparently, this is the method that Microsoft
recommends for totally blind users who wish to install Windows 8.
Yeah, which is kind of chintzy because you have to have a secondary partition, and most people either have a secondary partition for data, but not usually a second one for installing an operating system.
Yeah.
So I will say that if you are installing it from a CD and you have sighted assistance, once the installation process is done and Windows starts for the very first time, you can hit the Windows key plus U and it'll bring up a small menu for ease of use.
Does it look different than Windows 7? I mean, what is your user experience with this new Windows 8 been like?
Well, I've only used it for a couple hours last night because everybody on Twitter was going, oh God, how can you install it? Can you do it? I was chatting back and forth with Jeff Bishop and Rick Harmon.
From a visual perspective, what is it like?
Well, okay, let me give my plug. Chatting with Rick Harmon of BlindGeekZone.net. So wanted to give him a plug there because he gave me the instructions on how he was able to install it. It's one of these things where it's a Metro interface, so when you load it up, there is no start menu. You come up to the start window, and it's got all these little tiles that have your Microsoft Store, your desktop is a button, which will take you to a desktop interface that kind of looks like the same thing that you're used to, but it doesn't have a start menu. It has different things like your games, your software packages, and things that you've installed on there. And when you hit the Windows key, that's what comes up. You do not have the old traditional
start menu.
So
it's more like a home screen almost.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's like a home screen. So if you have like a Windows Phone, which most visually impaired users do not because there is no real accessibility yet on that. But if, say, you have an iPhone, it would be similar to your start screen, but you have a whole bunch of icons on there. So far, it's sort of hunt and peck, look around for different things. Because in order to get to, say, some of the menus and background settings, you have to like take your mouse and go to the bottom left corner and the bottom right corner and things like that. I listened to Windows Weekly this afternoon and they went through a lot of the different things and I'm just kind of like, okay, so in order to get to what they call charms, you have to hit the Windows key plus C, which gives you some other options, and it just seems really...
What are charms?
I'm not exactly sure yet, because I haven't had time to bring it up to see what that actually is. I didn't really play with the developer preview of Windows 8, because everyone kept saying, well, it's really not baked well enough. It's sort of...
Buggy,
and things don't quite work, and I was just kind of like, I'm not worth it. It's not worth it. I'm not worth it, and it's not worth it. So it's just a different user experience completely. In the show notes and in the post for this, I will include a link to winsupersite.com, where Paul Thurrott has laid out a list of about 30 or 40 hotkeys that you can use. During the Windows Weekly episode, he was explaining how to go to different things, and he was using all hotkeys, because mm-hmm. you have to either scroll with the mouse or scroll with the keys on the keyboard. So that's, it just seems a little bit frustrating, and I think that probably users of Windows XP and Windows 7 are going to be frustrated because things aren't where you expect them to be. But as I play with it in the VirtualBox environment, I hopefully will get a little bit better feel for things.
And for those who use screen readers, apparently Rickster the Geek, Rick Harmon, is much braver than certain people here, meaning myself, and installed it via dual boot. He has tried it with, I believe, System Access, JAWS 13, and NVDA. I'm not sure if he tried it with Window Eyes, or if he did, I may have missed the tweet, but he's been tweeting about his experiences. System Access, it sort of works with. NVDA, it kind of works with. JAWS 13 crashed out. The shark did not. JAWS did not like the Windows 8 Ocean.
Yes.
And went directly to the bottom.
The shark went directly to the bottom of the pool, I believe was what his comment said.
And it should be noted that the Freedom Scientific folks at CSUN have mentioned that Windows 8 support will not begin until JAWS 14 is released at some point in the future. So those of us with 13 who don't have any other screen readers may not get anything out of the Windows 8 consumer preview.
Yeah, and apparently they demoed JAWS running on Windows 8. Is that what I heard?
But did not hear that.
Okay, I heard someone on Twitter mention that it must have been like a special build or something.
I mean, if they did, it's not something that consumers have access to. It's something that's just, you know, just a company thing.
Yeah, most likely.
Which usually company people get access to it first, and then it comes out as a beta after a while, you know, later on.
Yeah.
For regular consumers.
So I guess probably... Don't you usually see a beta of JAWS like in October?
Usually the beta comes out in September or October. So hopefully that's the timeline we're looking at. I know when JAWS 12 came out, they tried to time the beta to when Windows 7 came out, the release.
And Windows 8 is guesstimated to come out sometime in September, October, maybe November of this year.
No, I mean JAWS 11.
I'm saying 14, the beta may come out about the same time as Windows 8.
Yeah. Which, incidentally, I still haven't updated this computer to 13.
Slacker.
Well, yeah. Anyway, I think we need to move on to another story now.
Yeah. But hopefully there will be more news on that as we tinker.
Yeah.
South Carolina is going to try a new way of giving back tax refunds.
Yeah, I haven't asked my parents about this, but I'm sure that they're South Carolinians, and I'm sure they're scratching their heads going, what the?
Don't do it.
Don't do what?
Don't do it.
I'm not. I didn't.
No, I'm just saying, don't do it, but you haven't described what it's going to be yet.
Oh, that's what it is. I thought you meant don't say the F word or something like that.
No.
Oh.
Why the frack would you do that?
I don't know. I was going to say, what the? See, that's when you said, don't do it.
Oh.
So I figured you thought I was going to say the F word.
Oh.
So I said,
no,
I'm not doing it. Oh, anyway, what South Carolina is going to do, and we're not sure why, is issue tax refunds in the form of Bank of America debit cards. And the money will be on the debit card. I guess your refund. You'll have this little account at Bank of America where you can dip into it. And that'll be your tax refund. It's associated with a debit card. If you use it
Well, you have three options, though. You can choose to receive a paper check, as you usually do. You can do a direct deposit, or you can
get this
receive
Bank of America
debit card, which is probably going after people that do not have checking accounts to deposit the money in.
I guess.
If you take the card and you go to an ATM that is not
Bank of America
affiliated with Bank of America, they'll charge you $2.50 for each transaction.
Yeah.
And there'll be a $5 charge if you actually close the account. And then,
with money still left in it.
Yeah, with money still left in it. Well, you would do that. I'm not exactly. Well, I guess they want you to spend all of the money before you close it.
Right.
Probably
that's
has to be a balance of zero before you can close it. And then if you go to a Visa Network branch or ATM, which is kind of one of those affiliation type things that Bank of America belongs to, if you go to one of those and you make a withdrawal and you do not withdraw all of the funds at one time, so if you got a $1,000 refund
and you withdraw $800,
that withdrawal will get a $10 surcharge, and then each subsequent withdrawal you make will then get another $10 withdrawal
surcharge.
Yeah,
that's surcharge. Just weird.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And we were talking about it at work today because I said, "Well, did you see that South Carolina is going to start passing it out?" And we couldn't quite figure out why.
Why would the bank want to do this? Wouldn't this just make a whole lot more work for them?
Well, in one regard, for the bank, somebody has to pay for the actual Visa debit card itself. It has to be printed, embossed, and sent out.
Sure.
So it's kind of a question of, okay, what is the state getting out of it, which they haven't disclosed what they're actually getting out of it. I'm guessing that they're probably getting free debit cards from Bank of America. If you don't know, in order to get a debit card embossed, it's about $2 per card. So if you figure 40,000 people at $2 a pop, that's $80,000. So I'm going to guess that probably Bank of America is giving them that. And then people were like, well, why in the world would Bank of America want to do that? Well, it puts Bank of America's logo in all of these extra people's pockets so that they might want to actually open a real account with Bank of America.
I guess.
And two, if you think about it in terms of the privacy things that have been going on the internet about third-party cookies and tracking and Google and Facebook and how they make their money by advertising and everything, Bank of America would be able to track every single one of your transactions and say, you know, Sally Mae, she got that check and she went down to Lowe's and she bought herself a new refrigerator and she went to Food Lion and she filled up on groceries and headed over to Big Lots or somewhere and bought some decorations. You know, they kind of would learn what's going on with that. And
right.
Bank of America is a smart enough business that they would be one that would want to grab that demographic information. So if you know anybody in South Carolina that is considering this, you might want to sort of toss that out there.
That
you might be sharing more information than you're thinking about. Because there's always a catch when you get these debit cards and gift cards from banks and things. It's just like going to your local supermarket and you've got that wonderful
Vic card or whatever it is.
Or MVP or something like that. Well, why are they giving you that discount? Well, they're tracking every single thing to figure out what you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
What do people from 18 to 40 like to purchase on a Saturday night?
Right.
Is it Coors or is it wine?
Or wine coolers.
Or Colt 45.
Woo!
Malt liquor.
I don't even think you could buy that at the grocery store. Can you?
It's beer.
Sort of. I thought it was like liquor, like Thunderbird or something.
Well, you can buy Thunderbird and
Ripple
and 2020 and it's Choice Fruits or something.
Ugh.
Tropical fruit flavor.
And they actually have fruit in the bottom of it.
Yes.
Ugh. Ugh.
I went with someone that purchased that for their 21st birthday party.
What did it taste like?
I don't really remember. It wasn't great. Let's put it that way.
The thought of it just makes me pucker.
So anyway, hidden fees with these debit cards. Yeah, it sounds like a good thing to get people to go and purchase things, but you might want to consider the ramifications.
Yeah. Another Bank of America story real quick before we move on. This is sort of a human interest story. The Housing Authority, the federal government, HUD.
Housing and Urban Development.
Yes. Housing and Urban Development has accused Bank of America of discriminating against disabled customers. So in other words, several disabled potential mortgagees went to purchase houses. And Bank of America required them to submit information about their disability in terms of what it is, how they were diagnosed, in some cases even physicians' reports. This is illegal.
Which is a Fair Housing Act violation.
Yes. Lenders cannot do that. They cannot ask about your disability, and they cannot request further information about it. People who rent can ask about disability in terms of what accommodations do you need, but lenders of money for mortgages and lines of credit and all that kind of thing and home equity loans can't ask about your disability and use that in terms of deciding whether or not they want to lend to you.
And it seemed this was being done for only people that were receiving government funds,
yes,
like
Social Security or
benefits.
Something like that, yeah. And I can understand how they might try and get away with it, but it still isn't legal. You know, I understand they want guarantees that they're going to get their money, and it's often, you know, people receiving Social Security are living almost hand to mouth in a lot of cases.
Yeah, a lot of paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, and it
or
really
month to month,
month to month check. Yeah, but it's still not legal, and I think they're getting slapped for it. But I'm not sure what the actual penalty is going to be.
Yes, probably to be determined.
Yeah.
Well, in happier news, Time Warner Cable is looking to try and help you save money on your internet bills.
They're thinking about it. They're starting a program in several Texas cities. Why they're starting in Texas, I don't really know.
Well, Texas does everything bigger and better, like San Antonio.
I guess.
And Houston.
And what's going to happen is that people who are essentially who want to save on a budget and who do not use that much internet can pay a certain amount for just, what was it, 5 gigs of data per month?
Well, you can sign up for their essential plan, which means that if you use less than 5 gigabytes of internet use per month, you can actually get a $5 discount. So if you purchase their low-end package, which is $19.95, you could get it for $14.95. And then if, say, 1 month you go over by 2 gigs, it would be $1 per gigabyte extra. Up to 5 gigabytes would give you same amount, same cost that it would have been costing you. So if you're a very thrifty person and want to save, and you know that you do a lot of email and web surfing, that would probably be enough.
Maybe. I mean, where it comes in is if you do a lot of downloading, if you stream via Hulu or, you know.
Oh, if you hit YouTube
web,
a little bit, this
YouTube
would be gone in a
yeah,
heartbeat.
You don't want to do any of that. It'd be interesting to see how many gigabytes we use every month. Because we do a lot of streaming, a lot more than we used to.
Yeah, the Hulu and Netflix gets a workout around here. I don't know. I need to set that up in the router and see what we do. I know it's more some months than other months.
Yeah.
You know, I think one time when I looked at it, it was like 180 gigs at a time.
Holy cow.
At one point because, yeah. Well, we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Enough said.
Anyway, yeah, so I don't know, $5?
I mean, it's a different approach than Comcast. Out on the West Coast, Comcast is limiting everybody to 250 gigs regardless of what plan you have. This is actually saying, hey, if you want to opt into this program, you want to save $5 a month, you can do that. I mean, some elderly person in a rest home or something, they might surf the internet and
well,
email.
If you're in a rest home, they have the common resources. They don't pay for their own cable. But
well, it depends. If it's an assisted living place, you might be paying for your own cable. So, I mean, you may want to save that $5 a month. And I mean, it's kind of like a cell phone. If you only use email and web page surfing, not video surfing or anything like that, you're probably okay with 5 gigs.
With a candy bar phone and 5 gigs.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we need another ding.
Why, yes, we need another ding-a-ding-ding-ding. Ah, AT&T is also working to continue the happy news here.
Mm-hmm. Very happy news.
They want to assist you in seeing other websites. They want to start a plan potentially later this year that will actually let app makers say, we'll pay for subscribers to use data on your network. So, say Netflix goes to AT&T and says, hey, we'll pay for every subscriber to use data to view web content. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. But say Hulu comes along and they can't quite afford that. Their customers are penalized by having their data used. That doesn't seem right,
does it?
I just find
this very confusing.
Well, think about it in terms of net neutrality. They're basically saying that if you are trying to get content from this one particular company, great, you can do that. It's no brainer. You can do it because the company has paid us an additional fee in order to give you free content. But this other company over here, you probably don't want to hit them because, well, we're going to charge you instead of charging the company.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they're double dipping a little bit there.
Seems like it.
I believe this is kind of what I described in Buzz Out Loud number 854 when I sent an email to them.
Oh, that was ages ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Long ago.
That was a long time ago when they were starting to talk net neutrality and things. I sent in a comment and it got read on the air, I think. But I was like, okay, so AT&T is going to start signing contracts with content companies to say, hey, yeah, use our data. That's fine. No problem. We won't charge customers that are accessing your data. So it would kind of squeeze out the little person that might be trying to do something like that. Packet shaping, or I guess that's what most people would call it.
Packet sharing?
Yeah, packet sharing, throttling data, something like that.
Something. Not quite throttling data. That's a little different.
Well, it's underhanded, whatever in the heck it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Because net neutrality, you shouldn't be packet shaping to give one company an advantage over another. So if a wealthy company like, hey, say Apple wants to do a subscription-based TV movie service.
Ooh.
They've got more money than God.
Yeah.
They would be able to go and say, hey, AT&T, let's give you some money here. That would immediately squeeze out, say, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. Everybody would be going to iTunes to watch content.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, something to think about. Now, one thing that did break just before this episode that I didn't get to inform you about was AT&T is changing their unlimited data plans.
Again?
Yeah. Oh. This goes right along with throttling data.
Yeah, that's our next story.
Yeah, which is our next story. So, what they are going to do is they are going to start throttling people at 3 gigabytes of data and 5 gigabytes for LTE users who might burn up a whole lot more quickly. This is sort of in response to our next story where someone actually sued and got money back.
Yeah, this guy was using data and he claimed that after he used 1.5 gigabytes, it started to go really, really slow. When he had an unlimited data plan, of course, and he had been told by AT&T that there wouldn't be no throttling until he got over the 2 gig mark, I think it was. And he started noticing after he hit 1.5 that it was really slow. He called them on it, essentially took him to small claims court, and got $850 back, which is essentially the price of his contract for the next 10 months until
plus,
it runs out.
Plus 10 gigabytes of data.
Yes, plus 10 gigabytes of data. So it was kind of weird because he was using almost the limit that AT&T had kind of specified in his contract, but he still got the money, and I guess now they've given clearer specifications on their throttling
Yeah, and a lot of people
rates.
Have been complaining because they have been getting text messages from AT&T saying, hey, you better watch your data. You're getting close to the 5% data usage.
Yeah.
You know, where they would typically throttle someone. So now they're changing that plan, so you would be
There's a definite number.
Yeah, you'd be throttled to the point until your next cycle ended.
I mean,
and started over.
The number they had before was 5% of the top users. Whatever they're using, that's when you'll be throttled.
Yeah, and now they're saying if you get to 3 gigabytes and you're an unlimited user, you're going to get throttled.
Yeah. So this is actually a little bit better. I mean, it makes clearer what they actually mean, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those
5% is kind of nebulous.
Well, it's an irritating thing because even though you say that you have signed up for unlimited data, you really have never gotten unlimited data because they kind of cap you at an arbitrary 5 gigabytes.
Right.
And Verizon has been doing this for a long period of time. So, hey, why not? They're just going to try and get you everywhere they can. I don't know what the advantage to that is other than maybe it gets people to stop using data to sort of free up traffic on cell towers.
Maybe.
I don't know. Doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. But it's irritating.
Sense. When has AT&T made sense?
I don't know, but all I can say is that I really am considering switching to Verizon when we have the opportunity. Not that any cell company is really going to be any better.
Apple is rolling out an update for MacBook Pro 15-inch 2008 models.
Yes, EFI software update 2.8 has been released that will try and fix a video flicker issue that happens on that specific model of MacBook Pros.
Yeah, so hopefully this will fix that. I don't know that it's really got any other features up its sleeve, but that's the main objective, is to fix that flickering issue.
Yeah, I believe the article said that it was only about 2 megabytes, so it's probably
it's just very small.
And only that.
Yeah.
In a story that we mentioned
previously,
when iOS apps were able to actually get access to your address book, well, turned out that they could also get access to your photos, which they could also then use your geotags in your pictures. So when you think about taking a picture with your cell phone, it actually puts a code in there that sort of gives the location where you are in that picture's coding.
Right.
So someone, I mean, it would fit into one of those CSI things. Hey, let's grab and see where they were at. Yeah. Let's get the coordinates. Well, Apple is working on trying to stop this, and we'll probably have an update soon to try and stop apps from being able to get to your photos.
Now, there's no word, I mean, that there's been any foul play or anything because of this, but it is something that they want to have fixed as soon as possible. They are saying that they're working on a fix, but beyond that, there really isn't that much detail.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that this 2012 year is probably going to be the year of privacy, because that's all the first two months have been
privacy.
You know, and it just keeps getting worse and worse, seems like.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to have your privacy leaked,
don't take pictures. Don't buy anything on the internet.
Don't use a cell phone.
Don't send email. Don't surf the web.
Just turn off your life. Yeah, turn off the internet, and God forbid, get rid of all those cards that you carry in your pocket from the grocery stores.
Yes. Yeah, that too. And so with that said, moving on to Twitter.
Well, actually, I want to mention one little thing that we didn't really include a story. Don't you love when I throw things at her and she gets irritated? Ain't it fun?
It's so cute.
Ain't it, though? Anyway.
That's up for debate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on March 7th, that is the day for an Apple event. And apparently the invitations that have been sent out actually do show what appears to be an iPad. So the iPad 3 may be coming out. There are no details, only speculation, whether it will be a quad-core processor, a dual-core processor, whether it'll be a Retina display or something else, whether it'll have an 8-megapixel camera or something crappier like it currently has, whether it's thicker, whether it has thinner, whatever. LTE, different bezel, will the home button be disappeared, just all of these different things will finally be told next Wednesday, March 7th.
Wow.
So just wanted to throw that out there so that people know that we didn't forget about it. We just don't want to speculate like they did on MacBreak Weekly this week, where they were like, well, if you look at the coating on the picture, it looks like a retina display. And if you look at the bezel, it looks like it's a darker color. Does that mean it would be plastic or something? Or a different alloy? I don't care for all that.
Wow.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So speculate all you want, but we will know more next week. Oh, and the latest one is that now Apple is supposedly working on a 7.6-inch iPad.
Ooh.
Which I don't know whether that would be better or worse. Probably for a non-visual user, it wouldn't make a lot of difference.
Now going on to Twitter.
Oh, Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter.
Oh. They are going to start putting promoted tweets in your iPhone and Android apps.
Ooh.
Now, it doesn't really say whether or not that's going to include non-Twitter applications, you know, like Tweetbot or
it doesn't,
Tweetlist.
I don't think so. I think from what I read, it was just the applications that were developed by Twitter for Android and Apple iOS. I don't think it includes other API clients, although I could be mistaken. What I'm not clear about is what exactly the promotional tweets are. I mean, I don't go on the web and look in the public timeline for these things, so I'm not exactly sure what they are.
I guess a company would be able to purchase a promoted tweet to say something like, hey, come over to Coca-Cola.com and get a free coupon for a six-pack of Coca-Cola Zero.
Ah,
Something like that. Now, apparently these promoted tweets will appear in your timeline, but as you scroll past them, they will just fall off your timeline.
Mm.
They will not do like was proposed a while back, where it actually sits at the top of your timeline for a set period of time,
which would be irritating.
When you're trying to scroll and see other things, and it's always there, and then you have the risk of clicking on it. And that's just nasty.
Gross.
And they should not appear in search results.
Ooh.
So that's a good thing. They will potentially show up in suggested followers.
Yeah.
So if you want to follow somebody, you may see, hey, come over and try and follow Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Speaking of Twitter, one cool thing, a NASCAR driver during the postponed Daytona 500 that was further
Brad
cursed
Kozlowski.
By fire. Yeah, he tweeted during the race, well, when the race was stopped.
Yeah, during the Daytona 500, they had a lot of issues with rain and things. Well, once they got it running on
Monday
night, they had an incident where they were under caution and one of the cars was coming around the track and they were using airplane engines on the back of pickup trucks to sort of dry and blow debris off the track and everything. Well, one car that was passing them broke and rammed into one of the jet dryers, causing a explosive event of fire and everything.
Jet fuel went all over the track and there was this huge fire and the race basically was cursed and had to be stopped. Although, since they had gone over half the race, there was a victor, right?
Well, actually, it stopped for 2.5 hours, and then
started
the race
back up again?
Yeah, it started back up, and they finished the last 50 laps or so that it was, and it ended up ending around 1 a.m. on Tuesday morning.
Well, while this fire was going on, I guess he was bored, and so Brad Kozlowski, I guess that's how you say it.
Yes.
Tweeted about the fire and put pictures in there and all kinds of really other cool stuff. And he got like 130,000 followers out of this.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, and they showed it on the broadcast too, because they were like, oh, and look at this. This must be our first tweet ever during a race. So the question came up, okay, well, where in the heck is he keeping an iPhone in the car? Well, apparently a lot of drivers have requested their crews to actually build them a compartment to put their phones. But I think he just had it in his pocket.
He keeps it in his pocket.
But some people actually have like a dashboard compartment to put their phone.
Now, this brings a whole new meaning to
texting and driving. Hey, we're only I'm right along here. I tried to pass this guy. I'm doing 198 around the corner. Whew. I mean, granted, in NASCAR, most of the time you're turning left all the time anyway, so how hard could that be?
Let's not even ask. Oof, that just gives me the creeps just thinking about
it. So, yeah, it's kind of funny to look at his timeline and see some of the pictures where he's showing from his view in the car, you know, okay, here's a whole bunch of cars stopped on the track because
when they're stopped, do they have to sit in their cars and just sit there, or can they get out and, like, walk around?
No, they can get out and walk around, things like that. It was a red flag situation, so they're not allowed to actually work on the car or anything. So a couple people actually tampered with their car and got sent to the back of the field when they restarted. So,
what did they do to it?
I don't know. I never really heard what they did. They just got penalized for it. You'll see drivers get out of the car, sit and talk and things like that to people sitting around them, that kind of stuff.
And then they take off all their crap, their suits and helmets.
Well, no, they'll take off the helmet and things and get out of the car. But other than that, you stay in your racing suit and everything. Be kind of silly to take that off.
That's true.
Unless you needed to run to the restroom.
Well, that could have been a problem.
Yeah.
Especially since it took a very long time.
Yeah, that always worries you. And there are stories of people
Let's not go there. Let's not. Moving right along to a few nuggets from CSUN.
Yes, a new app came out called Vision Assist.
This is an app by Slinkyware. Excuse me, but...
Slinky,
what a wonderful toy. I can't help but laugh that company name just sounds so...
It sounds more like lingerie.
Yes, it does. Slinkyware.
But it's SlinkyWare.com.
And to find out more about the app, go to visionassist.slinkyware.com. And it is basically a magnifier app. I guess it's supposed to be like, the one by Lumen. AI squared
there's
Lumen.
There's one called Lumen, L-U-M-I-N, that I've tried. This one looks kind of about the same. It's got some of the same features, I think. It is currently $3.99. Apparently, it came out on the 28th. I'm not sure whether it was $3.99 at that point or whether this is just an introductory price.
Yeah, and the press release we have doesn't say, and we didn't bookmark it, but again, visionassist.slinkyware.com, or you can find it in the App Store at Vision Assist. And basically, it does what it says. It's for people with vision loss, low vision, to magnify things around them, and uses the camera and the iPhone to do that. We figured we'd announce it. I don't think those folks are at CSUN, but
it did come out
during this time period. So we figured we'd just throw that in there. Code Factory is announcing Braille support for the Android in its mobile accessibility version 1.9. So we currently, of course, have voice support, but now you can use your Android with a Braille display and this mobile access suite of applications from Code Factory. And they are at CSUN. I'm not sure if they have a booth, but they are there and will be giving presentations and demonstrations of their products, both for, all their smartphones and their other products that they're working on. So look for them at CSUN or CSUN if you are there. The Twitter hashtag is CSUN12. Another company, Code Factory may have a booth, but I know that Perkins does not. They are flitting around at CSUN.
It's hard to keep track of all of the booths and seminars and things when you are afar.
Yeah, the Daisy Consortium has a list of all the booths and presenters and seminars and people who are there. I do know that the Perkins folks do not have a booth, I don't think, but they're there. They are exhibiting the new Seika 16-cell Braille display that they are going to be selling, as well as a new and revamped version of the Perkins Brailler. They have made some improvements to its construction, the next-gen Brailler, I guess, version 2.0.
Yeah, the Seika will be considered the Perkins Mini.
Yeah.
It's being rebranded.
It's a Perkins Mini. It's a little teeny-tiny thing. 16 cells.
That seems small.
It's going to sell for $1,995? In other words, $1,995?
Yes, I don't believe it's $1,995, the same as Bookshare.
I know of someone who bought a refresher Braille from APH that's 18 cells and loves it, but it's so small. It just, for me, that's not even one line of paper.
Well, I guess if you wanted something that was very small that you could put in your pocket, carry with you, maybe?
I don't know if it'd quite fit in a pocket, but it'd definitely fit in a purse.
Yeah, and that may be the whole gist to it, you know, something that you can whip out and just hammer out something really quick.
Yeah, and I don't know how fast to read on those. It really, I mean, you have to scroll a lot. And usually Braille displays have a mode where it just auto refreshes. It's like an auto scroll mode. I mean, my Braille Light had it, and it's like 10, 12 years old. So that's there, but I don't know how fast I could read with one of those little itty-bitty things.
I don't know.
Mm. Anyway.
You're not coordinated.
So the Perkins folks are there, and the Looktel folks have come out with a new app. Looktel, as you know, is the name of the money reader, the currency identifier. I kind of had a war of the currency identifiers last year. It was Looktel versus the
iNote.
The iNote, yeah.
By
money
the US
reader.
Treasury.
Yeah, it installed on your phone as money reader, and that was a piece of crap, and I don't think it's gotten better. Looktel is branching out, though, and there's now an Looktel Recognizer app by iPlex. It is $9.99, and it is now available in the App Store for iOS. I'm not sure if it's come out for Android yet. I do know that it has some big gaps in it. Apparently, it does barcodes pretty well. Some people are having better results with that app than they are having with, like, Digitize and other similar apps for the iPhone. Faster results and more accurate. And you don't have to place the camera in such a... It's not as picky about the position of the camera in relation to the object. However, the big downside is that it also is supposed to do object recognition, and it has no library of objects yet. Apparently, this is sort of like a crowdsource thing where people are going to create their own libraries and email them or somehow export them to the makers of the app, I guess. This is kind of unclear. Yeah, and then sort of combine them. I don't know. But in order to start the library, you need sighted assistance to help you match objects in your house with what they actually are. And as I
see troubles with that.
Yeah, people aren't too happy about that.
Let's see. I'm a blind user. I don't really have any sighted assistance. But, you know, I know this is an eggplant. This is really an eggplant. But instead, it comes out to be a banana or something.
Eggplants have very different shapes than bananas.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I was drawing a blank on what you would have. But yeah, I could just see somebody sending something in that was totally obscure like that.
Yeah, and I don't know why they haven't started to create a database. There probably are databases out there that are open source. I mean, there's, you know, the VizWiz people have already started something, and Omobi people have started, although I don't know if that app's still out yet. But in any event, apparently it's coming soon, quote unquote, and it will be in a future update, but I think I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
Considering that I spent a whole load of money on Digitize, and it proved to be a waste of time.
Well, somebody isn't too big on creating labels and putting them on stuff.
Digitize, that was what it was really good at, and creating the labels, I found that I wouldn't really need them. I mean, you know, you want barcode recognition and things like that, but I don't know. It just didn't seem like it was very useful, and it wasn't very accurate the times I tried it.
You're more into putting things in their place, and every place has a thing.
Yeah.
Sort of like that. All of the cans go in one area, and they're separated by a divider and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
that's
you know
true.
That you're getting tomatoes out of this can and green beans out of another, unless it gets switched.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think I'll wait until the object recognition of this is developed a little bit more and see what happens. But based on the fact that their currency identifier is so good, I really anticipate that they're going to have good results. And people have said that the barcode recognition is very very quick and snappy and does very well. So I'm looking forward to more development on that.
Well, the barcode reader, probably you can have an on-device database for that.
Yeah.
That's how the currency reader is so good, is because it doesn't have to go to the cloud to get anything.
Right, and I don't think this does either.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how many items they actually get in their database and how accurate that is. And then what do you do if somebody sends it in from a foreign country and it's not the same translation as what you would get in the U.S.?
That's kind of where this next one is going.
Oh.
Spain, the Spanish government, and other industries and charities in Spain are coming together to develop an accessible medications app for the iPhone or smartphones. And essentially what this is supposed to do is, if you've got a medicine, you will be able to key it into the app, and it will tell you all that you want to know about the medicine, including what your dosage is, side effects and instructions on how to take it. So basically it's like object recognition for medicine. You know, you scan the label of the medicine and it will read back all the information. So what they're currently doing is working to build a database of medicines and their accompanying information, dosages, side effects, and that kind of thing. And then you can use your smartphone to scan your medicine bottles and it will come up with that information. It's starting out with only 5 medicines, and it will expand to 35 medicines when it gets to be consumer ready, I guess. So they're really not, I mean, it sounds like they're trying to build it from scratch, and they're starting very small. This is only available in Spain and only available in Spanish, so it's not something that other countries are going to be able to take advantage of. This is a strictly Spanish-oriented project.
But it may give other pharmaceutical companies the idea of, hey, let's create an accessible app for our products like Merck and Pfizer and places like that.
Right. And, you know, even other countries with more socialized approaches to medicine may get the idea, like Canada or the UK, that this would be a good plan. So, you know, maybe it'll start something up in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I
guess there's something about Last Alert
getting
some
Speaking
actual
of
funding,
iPhones,
possibly.
You know, your pesky iPhone battery can just up and die. You know how it happens. And then you wonder to yourself, where's my phone? And
where
if your phone
where?
Is dead and you ring the phone. I had the scare last night. Where in the heck is my phone?
The clapper.
Yeah, you need a clapper for your phone. But what if your battery's dead? How are you going to find it? I mean, you know, there is my Find My iPhone app, but that doesn't work if your battery's not dead. Or your battery's dead, rather.
I think it keeps track of the last place it saw it.
Yeah, and that's what this does. This is an app for the iPhone. I'm not sure about Android. But I know it's definitely an iPhone app. It is being funded through Kickstarter. It's a Kickstarter project, and it's almost got the funding it needs, I think, called Last Alert. And what it basically does is it kind of keeps this geotag lock on your phone so that if your battery goes dead and you're looking for your phone, it can tell you the last place it saw your phone.
The only problem with these kind of apps is the fact that, okay, if you're in a building, like an apartment building, it can't tell you that, well, I am on the 14th floor, room C.
Yeah, or if you're in a hospital or somewhere, it can't see it because that they have stuff in those buildings that blocks the cell reception.
Yeah, so I mean, any type of app like that is going to have difficulties. It's only going to give you sort of a random thing. I mean, I've used the Find My iPhone a few times just to see what it does in different areas, and it's like, oh, you're here. Shows me a spot. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether this is actually going to try and be a little bit more accurate or what. I guess it comes down to the limitations
but
of the GPS on
the
phone.
They have built in accessibility features so that this now works with VoiceOver.
Oh, well, that's good.
So that is the reason that I bring it up here. And hopefully it will work well. And I don't think it's in the App Store yet, but I think it's coming soon.
Your mileage may vary.
Yes.
I guess there's a UC Davis student having some issues.
Yeah, there is a graduate student at the University of California, Davis, who is from Petaluma, California.
Getting
his graduate degree in organic chemistry and is in discussions and lobbying the U.S. government for creation of recorded and digitized textbooks for educational purposes. Now, for those of you who do not live in the U.S., may not know that such textbooks are routinely created by private organizations such as the Library of Congress, the Learning Alley, Learning Ally. God, why do I want to say that? Learning Ally, which was formerly Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic, and other similar groups. But this guy apparently wants the government to do it, I guess. The article really wasn't that clear, the one that we have anyway, about what his actual goal is. I don't know whether he wants the government to try and enforce standards in the creation of such texts, or whether he wants the government to fund and oversee the creation of these audio texts for educational purposes. Currently, I guess they give some funding, but they don't really oversee it. I mean, these are privately run companies, with the exception of the Library of Congress, of course, that RFBND, of course, is like a privately run organization. So, you know, this person's goal is a little unclear, but I think it's a case of wanting to make big government bigger.
Uh-huh.
So, that's my conservative take on it, but I think that's what's going on. And hey, you know, you never know what could happen with that.
Yeah, might be some more news coming out of this.
Yeah, and maybe if, you know, they want some government oversight, maybe they'll be able to do that, if not provide the actual recording facilities and do recordings. Although these organizations pretty much have very high quality standards anyway. Speaking of Learning Ally, yes, I pronounce it right this time, they're having a readathon, if you will. It's a national recordathon. It's on the, you know, dates of the national readathon, I guess you would call it, from March 3rd to March 9th. And to celebrate reading awareness, they're going to have various celebrities and authors to record books for them. A lot of times, sometimes there are various authors that are coming in and recording their own books, reading their own books, and also various celebrities that are coming in and reading books for Learning Ally and their various studios. So we have a list in the article in our show notes about all the various authors and celebrities that are coming to participate, or at least some of them, in this March 3rd through 9th recordathon.
Yeah, I guess they get paid pretty good if you're doing like Audible books, well, and things, from what I've heard a few people say.
I don't think that their rates are anywhere near probably as good as Audible's, but, you know, I think a lot of these people are doing it out of philanthropy.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, I mean, like Audible, I've heard, will pay like $5,000 for, wow, like a 20-hour book or something.
Wow. Yeah. Library of Congress pays, I think, $30 or less for each hour of reading time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that would transfer to with a 20-hour book. Some of those books take a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it would end up being $5,000 or so, but I don't think so. And I'm not sure what Learning Ally's rates are at all.
Yeah.
So last but not least in this series of recordings, webinars, and readings, the government Disability Council sponsored a webinar today from 2:30 to 4 p.m. on the 2010 Standards of Accessible Design that were put into the revised Americans with Disabilities Act. This is not accessible technology. This is design in terms of public places and venues and transportation. This webinar was today. I'm not sure if there's going to be a podcast or if you can listen to it again. You can go to ncd.gov and find out more details about that. And there's also an article in our show notes about the webinar itself.
Yeah, and maybe you can inquire if there is not a video of that or audio.
Yeah. The Emergency Access Advisory Committee is sponsoring a fair on March 28th and 29th and wants input from the public and other government agencies about emergency apps or ways to communicate with 911 through text messaging and other mobile means. So they're going to have like an exhibit fair, and people are going to, I guess, show off their various methods of communication, or, you know, the various apps that they've used to get emergency assistance quickly to the holders of the various cell phones and things. Like I said, another article that's not especially clear, yay, this is our government, folks, about the ultimate purpose and goal of this event. But if you want more information, we have that article bookmarked in our show notes. And Panasonic is gearing up to power its newest line of TVs with Nuance's Dragon applications. And this means that you will not only be able to speak commands to your TV, but your TV will be able to talk to you, theoretically, and provide built-in guides and other features that previously, you know, you had to read the screen to access, but now it's going to be sort of like TV Siri, I guess. You can have a conversation with it. What's on at 7 p.m. type of thing. And it will have the schedules and things programmed into it, you know, from your cable company, and it will be able to read out the information that you want based on whatever your cable company puts in it.
Yeah, you know? I don't know if it's going to be like the cable box info.
I'm not sure.
It's not completely clear at this point the implementation is going to be on that. I think there was some mention of this back at CES this year.
They mentioned it, but weren't especially clear on it. But I guess they're one step closer to actually releasing the TVs.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on TV manufacturers to try and build these kind of things in because they're doing smart apps. They're putting applications in there. Now you've got things like Xbox Kinect that is actually waving and talking to your television. So I guess they're wanting to get something in there as
that's just
built
up.
In.
Ugh. I don't even like talking to my iPhone. I know I wouldn't like talking to the television.
Huh? You don't even like talking to me. That's the only reason we do this podcast.
That's true. This is our mode of, this is our one form of communication every week, the podcast.
Pretty much. Unless I appear on a Mushroom FM show with you at some point, which is a rarity.
It happens.
We mostly communicate via Twitter.
Pretty much. What were you thinking?
Oh, boy.
The world of autocorrect has sunk to an all-new low.
Lanier Technical College was shut down for a day because of an autocomplete texting error.
Autocorrect, yeah.
Yeah, autocomplete, autocorrect.
This student wrote that he was gonna, G-O-N-N-A.
No, G-U-N-N-A.
Oh,
he was
gonna.
He was gonna be at West Hall. Why he couldn't say, I'm going to be there this afternoon.
Or just say, we'll be at West Hall.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, the autocorrect, he first of all did two silly things. He had autocorrect enabled and it changed gunna to gunman. He also texted the wrong number. So the person who got the text didn't know who he was. Instead of texting him back and saying, who are you? And all this kind of thing. They called the police and told the police that there was a gunman going to turn up at West Hall that afternoon.
I wonder if the person said, it's going to gunman be at West Hall this afternoon.
Yeah,
that's some great language there.
Anyway, so the police went and shut the school down and did searches and all this kind of thing. And it turned out it was all because of the autocorrect on this phone. Now, the question is, which phone would transmute gunna, G-U-N-N-A, into gunman? The producer, the writer of this article said that he tried it on a couple of different smartphones, and the autocorrect in those phones translated it to gunnar, G-U-N-N-A-R, the name of, like, somebody from Switzerland or Sweden or Norway or something, but he didn't get gunman out of it. So,
Yeah, I don't know. It's Well, and two, it was also mentioned in another article that I saw that it's not really clear if the person that received the text message read it clearly either. So
maybe
there's kind of a discrepancy going on as to whether or not it is actually gunner and gunman or gunna. Who spells gunna?
Gunna? Who spells gunna that way? Gunna. G-U-N-N-A. I missed that. When reading it with Jaws, I didn't catch
my
that.
My iPhone has translated it to gunnar, G-U-N-N-A-R.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, could be considered gunman or something, you know, if the letters are all stuck together. I don't know.
Anyway.
We digress.
We digress. And this
Ramble Fest that you've been listening to.
My God, how long was this?
Is Tech Texas Weekly.
Episode
129.
If you wish to look at the articles and stories we decided to cover for this episode, we do not actually have as many as it may seem because of this Ramble Fest. You can go to delicious.com/techaccess/129. If you wish to check out the Melting Pot show on Mushroom FM at 7 p.m. Eastern on a Sunday, feel free to do that from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
And you know, we didn't even mention the big project.
We didn't, did we? We didn't. Coming out soon to all book lovers, I will be starting a podcast with a fellow Mushroom FM broadcaster named Shannon Curry called Book Hoarders Anonymous. So stay tuned for the first episode of that to come out sometime next week.
But you can sign up to follow that on Twitter at twitter.com/bookhoarders.
And so try that. As yet, the account has maybe one tweet in it. The webpage is still under construction, and we should hopefully be getting that up next week as well.
Yes, and there is a upcoming podcast episode at some point, probably be up in the middle of next week as well. So we'll be tweeting and promoting that. But you can find the website if you would like to bookmark it at
bhapodcast.com. Yes, .com.
.com.
Yes, and the daily tips, or the newer revamped version, will be coming out sometime this month as well.
Yes, we are working on it.
We are.
We promise.
We promise. We really do.
It'll be coming out in March. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, March. I said sometime this month.
Well, we won't designate a year.
Oh, that's true. It could be March of next year, for all you know.
So, anyway, all of that is coming up soon.
And this will be the end. If you wish to follow me on Twitter, I'm Erin Edgar.
And I'm Rodney Edgar, who was supposed to do this ending, and she took it over.
Simply say...
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Gee, golly.